Welcome, everybody, to episode 113.
Lucky number 113.
Oh, man, did you just jinx us this episode? If it makes it, if you're listening to this, we're dead. we died in cyberspace.
I'm still laughing about that you tried to put a pen behind your ear, but it was one of those big novelty pens.
Yeah, it's a big fat pen. It's like, the Hard Rock Hotel.
Like from brought this. Like from a Marx Brothers movie.
Yeah. It's that. And it keeps falling out. And I have pretty big ears. Yeah. I have weird, ridiculous ears.
On paper, it seemed it could have worked.
It just seemed to work. And it's a great theory.
Yeah.
That's what this show is. Really good theories.
You could use duct tape to keep that back. That's, yes.
I should duct tape it between my ear and head.
We have a lot to talk about today.
Oh, yeah, and it doesn't revolve around this stupid pen.
Yeah.
So let's move.
We'll see.
Let us move forward.
First of all, we want to just tell everybody that we are shipping the books out right now. We're working as fast as we can, so they are going out, and we really appreciate all the pre-orders. There were just so many of them, we're a little behind, so we're getting there,
we're
though.
We're getting there. We worked all day on last Friday and then Saturday, so we'll be doing more this week. So be patient.
They will be going out.
Thank you so much. And when you guys do get them, you can start posting reviews on Amazon or whatever, because that helps the rating.
Yes, you guys are pretty much our ground game. So when you get the book and you've read it, and if you want to post reviews on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, out in the other the book review sites, that would be great. That
Kitten
actually
Hand
help.
Street
Kitten
Team.
Kitten Hand Street Team. That would be great. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and then, of course, the live show Monday, June 18th at Nerd Melt. Meltdown Comics in Hollywood. $8 tickets in advance, $10 at the door. We're going to do a live podcast there, and all the books are going to be there for all that. We'll have books there to what?
We're going to sell books there and sign them. I think that's what you're
trying
to say.
And authors will be there to sign
them
too. I was trying to say.
Actually, most of the authors will be there. There's only two that are not going to be there. And I know a lot of you are saying, well, I want to go to all the shows and eventually track down all the writers. That's good to do, except for Neil. He's kind of a recluse, so
he's not a performer. Let's see him in some weirdo that lives in a cave. Neil's agoraphobic.
He's both. Yeah, but he will be at the show, so you can make sure you get Neil's signature on Monday.
He's the one guy that's like not on the road.
So, but
Susie Nakamura is more of a comedic actress. She's not like a road comic. So
and she'll be there. Laura House will be there. Matt Weinhold, Mike Schmidt, Jackie Cation, Dean Haglund, Alan Havey, Dave Anthony, everyone will be there. The only two authors that won't be there are Greg Proops, who will be in London, and Lord Crett, who's in New York. And that's it. Everyone else will be there. It's going to be a great show, too. We're going to bring all the writers out. We're going to talk about movie genres. We'll bring them out two at a time. So it'll be a really fun kind of...
They'll all be sort of talking about... I think the plan is to kind of have everybody talk about their chapter that they wrote.
Yes. And in general, and their favorite movies. And it'll be a really nice kind of bonus episode as well.
And the, tickets are on sale for the Los Angeles Podcast Festival. So go to lapodfest.com. And we're only...
Tickets and hotel rooms are going.
Yeah, they're going quick. And there's not that many. So there's only... I think we've said this, but there's only weekend passes. There's not single event... or anything like that. So,
and they're cheaper until August 15th. So if you get them now, you'll save like 30, 40 bucks or something.
$35.
Yeah.
You have to buy them now.
Great. So let's introduce our guest.
Let's do it.
Yeah. First time on the show. Very excited to have him. Please welcome Sean Conroy.
Sean Conroy.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, I was also going to say, we've known each other for a while. I just did the podcast that you do, Long Shot.
The Long Shot, yes.
The Long Shot with Eddie Pepitone.
Mm-hmm. Some people call it the Long Shot Podcast. But to me, that means it would be called actually the Long Shot Podcast. So it's like saying the Happy Days sitcom, you know. Eddie and I have done that show for a while.
Yeah, and then I remember, I'm trying to think where you and I met.
I think we might have met at Eddie's 50th birthday roast.
Yes, that's right.
When I was hosting and I ripped you after your set.
You made fun of me because you said that.
I said, I still remember it. I said, Graham Elwood demonstrating that a complete lack of preparation does not guarantee success.
That's going to be on his tombstone.
That is the premise of my life. A complete lack of preparation. The show, everything. Yeah, that's right. That is, and you were in a tuxedo.
I was the MC, so I felt like I had to dress up for the occasion. This was his 50th birthday party. Yeah, you know?
That's right. We did a roast in Michelli's.
Yeah, down in the basement there.
The basement of Michelli's.
Oh, cool.
Which I love Michelli's.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Good Italian food, folks. Great place to have a roast. So tell us a little bit about the Long Shot Podcast. You guys have been doing it for...
about 2 years now. Mm-hmm. We're coming up on episode 100, which is nice. Nowhere close to 113.
Someday.
Yes. 13 days from now. Or I don't know how that works. But it was a thing where Eddie... and I have known each other for a long time. And it was sort of right around that time when everybody was like, oh, podcasting seems interesting.
Right.
And I went to Eddie and I said, we should do one of these things that I don't really know what they are. And he said, oh, actually, there's a guy I know who's been wanting me to do a podcast with him, which was Jamie Flam. Mm-hmm. Some people call him Jamie Flam. Some say Jamie Flume. There's a variety of pronunciations. But anyway, Jamie and
How
Eddie and
Jamie
I...
Jamie pronounce it?
I don't know.
Jamie's a mystery.
So Eddie and Jamie and I got together over here in the Valley. I live in Hollywood, not to, you know. But I came over to the Valley and met with Eddie and Jamie. We talked about it a little bit. And then I had a girl who was a student of mine at the time, a sketch class student. And I teach a lot of... writing classes. I used mm-hmm. to teach a lot of improv classes. And like, you know, when somebody just has a really great positive energy about them. Mm-hmm. And her name was Amber Kenny. And so when we decided we were going to do this thing, I was like, okay, Eddie's really dark and angry. I am maybe not as angry, but equally, if not more dark. Jamie was an X factor to me at that point. And he still is. And I was like, let's get Amber on to be sort of the contrast to all of that. And she wasn't there when you did the episode right. the other day, but she's great on the show. She mm-hmm. really adds a very specific thing to it. So we started doing it, and we did a couple that we were like, okay, we don't know what this is. We don't know what we're going to do.
That's, I think, it's like every podcast starts that way.
Yeah, because you're sure. like, what is this even? And yeah. and we went back and listened to the first episode not too long ago, and it was just like, woof, what the hell is going on?
I have not done that.
But we finally figured out a format, and it's been working for us.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the cool thing about podcasts. And I
can be whatever you want. Right. You can change
whatever
it.
You want, and you find this format, and you can just change it and play around with it. Like, we've played around with it different times, and then like doing them, we've started to do a little more live shows mm-hmm. and that is a different animal.
Sure.
You know, and how do we take this, but you know, we can't just do this because it's just three of us in a garage.
Right.
It's got to be more of a performance because there's a whole audience there. So how do you change that and everything? And I was just flashing when I came to do it at your place. Uh-huh. And you know, it's up in the Hollywood Hills, and it's a very fancy mansion. It's next to a like some other all these apartment complexes sort of jammed in next to
right,
each other.
Right.
And I remember just walking up these stairs, and then I just see someone's balcony in this other building, and there's just like a rusted out bike and a yes. board. And I was just like, this is the glory of podcasting. You're always coming to someone's apartment or garage, you're above a 7-Eleven or something like that. And it's just, I just love that.
Yeah, it's great. It's the whole DIY thing, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I just started a new podcast myself, just my own thing, which is just sketch comedy. That I write and do all the characters on and everything. And I've only done one episode, but like you said, it's just one of those things where I was like, I want to try this and see what happens.
See what happens.
You know?
And you know, the great thing is the fans kind of tell you.
Right.
Oh, that was awesome.
Immediately.
Or what are you doing?
I got a lot of phone calls saying, don't do that again.
You have a phone number. You have an 800.
From the internet.
From the internet.
Somehow they track me down.
The internet is calling. That's actually Skynet, which is a real threat. So let's get into...
I think we should. First of all, interesting, Madagascar 3 beat Prometheus for the weekend.
Well, the story on this was Prometheus had like $25 million on Friday, and it was in the lead. And then...
I went at midnight on Thursday.
Yeah. And then maybe word of mouth got out. We'll get into that. But then Madagascar took it over.
Because of the families going over the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, and every family movie.
Word of mouth got out.
Yeah, yeah. That too.
Dude, you got to check out Madagascar 3.
Marilyn Hooper took her kids to see it, and there's a review on the site, okay. And she is she's a bit more generous with the franchise than I've been. I'm not a fan of the franchise, but her and her kids seem to like it, so you can check out her review. Now, let's get into it. Prometheus. We all saw Prometheus. I think we should let our guests go first, and sure. Then we will add point or counterpoint or just agree.
I think we're all going to agree.
I felt like from the opening scene, I was like, this is going to be bad.
Really?
The guy up on the waterfall and drinking
not a spoiler
this stuff.
Alert. It's the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can't give spoilers.
Okay.
But.
I just was like, oh, God. And then I was right.
End of review.
Yeah. No, I mean, I thought a lot of the visual stuff, obviously, he's brilliant at that, mm-hmm. at the effects, and it looks amazing. But I felt like the story was like a weak rehash of stuff we had already seen in those other movies. You know, it didn't really do anything interesting. They kind of hit a lot of the same beats. Mm-hmm. A couple of them worked really well. Most of them were less impressive than the first time I saw them in Alien or Aliens or whatever. And I had a problem. One of my big problems with the movie was accents. Like, Idris Elba.
Why?
Was brilliant on The Wire. Had an amazing. I didn't know for two or three seasons that he was British.
Yeah.
And in this, he clearly was going for something Southern. And I felt like he was vacillating between Huckleberry Hound and the Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia. Like, he was just all over the place.
Yeah, that was starting to drive me crazy, and I was like, why?
And why couldn't he just be British?
Yeah.
And same thing with, I don't know how to say her name, but Noomi, whatever her name is.
Noomi Rapace or whatever.
Noomi Rapace. she, what is she, Swedish or something?
Or she's from Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Yeah, she's yeah. Swedish. Mm-hmm.
So her too, she was trying to be British, and she just sounded like a Swedish person trying to sound British. And it was like, they have scientists in Sweden. That's almost the headquarters of science because it's near Norway, which is where the Nobel Prize comes from. So why couldn't she just be Swedish?
Oh.
And that takes me out of the movie. I mean, I know that's finicky, but it makes me the whole time going, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
I got to say, like, I had a very similar response. Like, again, all those actors, like Idris Elba, I was like, oh, he's amazing. He's amazing. And
he's a great actor.
He's a great actor. And why is he, and with him specifically choosing this cowboy accent,
mm-hmm.
and going to your thing about, okay, there's this international science team, right? And, you know, they discover this thing on Earth, and then cut to 4 years later, they're in space. And they were in Cyberlock or whatever it's called for 2 years where their bodies are frozen. Okay.
It is called Cyberlock.
Cyberlock. Thank you. And it's available on the website.
signed
autograph copy.
By Idris Elba.
will autograph. And
but
it will
he
come.
Signed it in a Southern accent.
Yeah. Hello? What? I'm from Texas, or I am. And I was like, so they all get out of Cyberlock, and now comes the briefing. We're coming up on the planet. And they're all just like this ragtag team of like truck driving mercenaries. Like, I'm just like,
none of them know each other.
None of them know each other. So you had no briefings. You know, you were going to go into space for 2 years to discover the origin of man.
But you don't know what the hell. No, you don't even know that. They didn't even know
they
that.
They didn't know anything about yeah. each other. I was like, you know, in Alien, this is the thing that drives me crazy. And I've spoken about this before. There's this. This is the most important discovery of mankind, right? In this movie, that's the premise. And you're just going to slap together this ragtag team of like, well, he's a plumber and Idris Elba's got a shitty accent, so let's get him involved. You know, like, wouldn't there be a year of briefing right. and training before anyone even got on the ship? And now they're just like, what's this? This is dumb. And then when those two idiots who get separated.
By the way, about those two idiots wearing a pair of clear framed plastic spectacles does not turn you into Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
That's how I felt with that guy. Like, he was the quirky comic relief guy.
And scientist he was, guy.
Yeah, so why desperately trying to
right
be...
Right there, there's a... Why are you having comic relief on this? Why are you doing... Bill Paxton
Why
did
are people
it,
still wearing glasses in the future?
Exactly. And these guys were separate.
Why are they wearing them now?
And
no offense.
Chris, take off your glasses.
Okay. Well, look, I can still see.
There, one's a biologist, and then the guy with the crazy mohawk and the tattoos, he's a geologist. And they get separated, and they're bumbling around like some high school field trip in a horror film.
Right.
Like, what are you idiots doing?
And they're terrified. And that goes back to what you were saying. It's like, don't they have some kind of process where they pick people who aren't going to just completely fall apart the moment? I mean, they knew they were flying them off to a distant planet where they didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And yet
there
they
might
pick
be alien
two guys who just shit their pants
And then they come across, I don't want to give too much away, but they come across a life form and they're just like, oh, this look, they're just stumbling around like dummy tourists who are just like, oh, hey, a cobra. You know, like, is this fun? It was insane to me. Like, I was like, and I so wanted this to be great. I'm such a Ridley Scott fan. We talked about this on the show leading up to it. Like, oh man, Prometheus, this is going to be great. What is this? And even Charlize Theron says it. My company spent $1 trillion to fly you guys out here. And that's why we just handpicked guys off of Craigslist to be the goddamn science team. Like, drove me crazy.
To be fair, two of them were from Monster.com.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't want
they to were tell. Actually putting their resumes up.
They did good stuff. Yeah.
But here's another thing. And I'm going to be a little bit long-winded about this, but I went to college with a guy who was in all the plays. He always played like the Jimmy Stewart character in every show. Mm-hmm. You know, he always had kind of a gravity to him and an older fella. And so he's like 21. He's playing, you know, older men, and he wanted to be an actor, and he flew out to Hollywood. He had a connection through a friend of his to an agent out here in Hollywood. He came out to Hollywood and he had a meeting with this agent, and the agent said, Chuck, what do you want to do? And Chuck said, well, I specialize in playing old men characters. And the agent said, Chuck, this is Hollywood. If we want an old man, we will hire an old man. Not necessarily true, because in Prometheus, Guy Pearce played a very old man, which I found ridiculous.
I kept going, oh, the only clearly Guy Pearce is going to find some fountain of youth on this alien planet, and then we're going to see young Guy Pearce running around. No?
Well, that might be in the director's cut.
Well, that's okay.
All right, you guys. I'm going to give a differing opinion on this movie, but not discount what you guys said. I actually liked it a lot more than you guys did. And as soon as the movie started and the Ridley Scott's vision just kind of washed over me and just blew me away in the beginning, the setup was amazing. You know, the scientists going into space and Ridley Scott's vision, everything looked different. He's such an auteur that when you see a Ridley Scott film, oh, this doesn't look like every other alien movie. This doesn't look like every other spaceship. Everything is there with a purpose, and it looks different, and it makes sense. It looks real. Like, you believe, I believe, like, you know, those characters. I believe the ship. I believed everything that was there in the setup of the movie. And then as the movie progressed, the cracks started appearing, unfortunately. And, you know, people are saying this Prometheus was a... You know, a prequel to Alien. Yeah, Prometheus was a prequel to Prometheus.
Yeah.
That's really what was going on, which is a shame. And I that's when I looked at the credits and I realized that the problem is solely with the screenwriters.
Yeah.
And I looked at one of them, and one of them is from Lost. And if you look at the show Lost, Lindelof.
Yeah.
And you realize, what was the thing that made Lost really cool? All these fantastic setups and these great questions. What was the shittiest thing about Lost? None of them ever got answered. And that's exactly what the structure of this film was. Mm-hmm. It was this weird Lost mythology that went nowhere, which it didn't have to happen. Look, it was classic science fiction setup. Mm-hmm. Awesome setting, awesome questions being raised, awesome journey, awesome... You know, just characters that were like, we're looking for something and just were worried about what they were going to find. Now, you know what's clever? Paying that off. If you answer some of those questions, they don't have to be exact answers, but you can't just set everything up and then just have everything peter out. And the motivations got really weird. Like, well, why is this character doing this? Well, why is this character? Why is the robot doing that? That makes no sense.
That was really weird to me, the robot thing.
Why is the robot doing this if he's getting... instructions from the old guy. You know, why would the old guy tell him to do... Like, a lot of it got really, really convoluted just for the sake of a set piece. And that's where things really, really went off the rails. And one of the things I found really fascinating is that you guys brought up the setup of, we just spent $1 trillion to bring you into space. Do you have some kind of ulterior agenda? If you were to raise the money, we'd be doing your agenda. Right now, we're doing, you know, our $1 trillion agenda. And then you never find out what the agenda is. It's another thing that just falls, you know, to the side. And there was just so many cool setup-y things, and there was just so many cool things in there, and it just got bogged down by convoluted mythology.
And dumb, like, the characters with their little bickering. Like, you don't need Gilligan.
And you guys brought up a great point where it's like, if this mission is so important, clearly there's no chain of command. The crew is doing whatever they want to do. They just leave whenever they want. Sure. They just go whenever they want. Oh, all right, I'm going back to the ship. Wait, no, you're not. In the military, they would shoot you to do that. You can't just do whatever you want when you're on a mission. And just stuff like that. And then also, if you're going that far out into space, well, this is a science vessel. We don't have any weapons. Really? You're going to sleep for that many years and there's no soldiers on this ship? Nobody would spend
One, but remember the very beginning, the doctor goes, oh, no guns.
Oh, no.
Are you an idiot?
And he wasn't a soldier. That's what they're, oh, well, he's like the enforcer. He's the security. Then you realize he's a geologist. No, you have the soldiers and then you have the scientist, and then that's how
society works.
Yes, that's how you do a mission. You don't give, you know, the geologist a flamethrower who doesn't listen to orders. And then so it all that stuff. The problem with this film was that there wasn't one huge thing wrong with it. It was a bunch of little things that added up into one big mess of like a second and third act. But the setup, the vision, everything going in, I thought it was amazing. I mean, really, when we get the first half of the movie, it really didn't start falling apart kind of until the second half. Now, it also, the trailer makes it look like there's a lot more action in the movie, and it's not. It's more thriller and horror, and there are some very disturbing scenes in this movie, and there's definitely some horror in there. Actually, more than a little bit. And I bought into all of
one,
that.
There was one, I won't say what it was, but there was one scene that I really loved sort of in the middle there.
I know exactly what scene you're talking about. There can't be two of them.
No.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And I was like, I was actually watching that scene with like, I'm squinting my eyes and squirming in my seat. I mean, that's, I'm like, yes, that's good sci-fi horror filmmaking.
If there was more of that
stuff,
I would have liked it a lot more.
And it like that kind of followed a little bit of a progression, but it's like, for every logical thing that you saw in logical progression, there was one thing that you just went, what? Well, that makes no sense, and that has nothing to do with what you just said before.
I think what it was is it sort of touched on what Sean said was, I felt like in the first Alien movie, they're minors, and they get thrust into this crazy situation. So of course, they're not highly trained. They're just minors. So then they do turn on each other, and that's what makes it compelling, because what would have just a bunch of blue-collar regular Joes do if this crazy shit showed up.
And the second one, they actually send soldiers.
Military.
Yes, they send military to go down, and Paul Reiser is the evil corporate guy.
Right.
But it's like they took the you know, the infighting dynamic of the first Alien, and then Paul Reiser's thing from the second one, and then put him with all these people that you're like, it may, like, all of the things that you said, all of those questions that were raised in this movie that make great science fiction, I was like, you don't need bullshit, petty politic, infighting. You don't need
that. On top of that.
On top of that.
Yeah.
We're trying to find out crazy aliens. Mm-hmm. That's enough. I'm in. I'm not going to be like, oh, there's no love story, or, you know, everyone gets along too much. It's not about, they're all just, there's no chain of command. It was insane. It was just like
why do you have a captain if no one listens to
him? No one listens to him. It was literally like a horror movie where a high school field trip stumbles across and they all flip out and turn on each other. Like, these guys had no idea that when they were being frozen for 2 years that they were going to show up in what? Fucking Alien Disneyland?
Yeah,
like, what?
Generally, 2 years, you're going to go pretty far out. It's normally we go 6 months. Oh, 2 years, that's a little farther.
And yeah, exactly. Like, no weapons, no, they're not prepared for any. And then just the total disregard. And then they tried to, like, in the writing, put this Band-Aid over this problem of, like, that's like such a, anytime I watch a lot of science shows, like nerdy Nat Geo shows, they're always talking about the potential of some sort of foreign disease wiping us all out. You know what I mean? And they're just like running around, taking their helmets off.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing, too. Yeah, yeah.
That was insane.
I mean, okay, all right.
And then they just tried to go, oh, just go through the shower that fucking cleans you out or whatever. The decontamination. Yeah,
the air is breathable. Shut I'm like, oh, well, wait, oh, there's stuff moving around here. Should we keep our helmets off or should we put them back on?
No, let's keep them off.
Did they never see War of the Worlds? Don't they know that there could be some tiny germ on the planet that they could pick up?
You know, it's a shame. It was, I'll tell you, it wasn't a horrible movie. When you put it all together, it wasn't a horrible movie. For me, anyway, it wasn't horrible. It was just... I really just wanted more. And if you take...
I felt a little Avatar'd.
Oh, see, I didn't feel that bad about it.
Like, not that bad, but I felt like... Because you're right. The way it looked...
And the setup.
The
it
setup was,
like, was
amazing.
You just go, oh my God, this is classic science fiction.
This is
fiction.
Great
this is,
science fiction.
I'm on board.
But then, like, the characters were just... They just cut and pasted... characters together for the script itself. You know what I mean? Like that's why I felt like they
renamed the Lost Castaways.
Yeah,
and they put them.
And I also had a moment in the movie, because one thing I liked about the movie for the first part of it was you don't know, like when Sigourney Weaver was in Aliens,
right?
You're like, oh, she's the main character of the movie, and in this one, you don't know. Right away, like who are the people who are going to live, and you know,
it's ensemble,
right? And then I had a moment about halfway through where I was like, oh, that character is the Ripley character.
Well, yeah, because they start with the scientists finding the images of the cave paintings and stuff like that, and then there's a lot like we were talking about. There's a lot of really interesting questions that are raised that never get answered or even hinted upon. Like, you could be vague. We talked about this already, but you could be vague with your answers. That, you know, 2001 was philosophical science fiction. No one kind of minded that was, okay, you can like that movie because it went all the way through. But if you're asking specific questions that have obviously specific answers, you have to answer them.
Yeah,
you have to answer them. You can leave the cosmos questions vague, but, you know, specific ones that is the premise of your movie, that's driving your movie, you have to resolve them.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're going to put a part one at the end of it. Yeah. But no.
Which it kind of felt like.
It did. Yeah, oh, I'm saying man. It felt like a prequel to a prequel. Yeah.
That was a little, I was like,
so
boy, I don't know if I'm going to the second one.
I'll tell you, it's the kind of movie where there were so many good things about it. Like some of the imagery, it has that weird, also horrific sexual imagery of the aliens. Oh my God.
Yeah. And the just technology. Yeah, yeah.
Cringing,
like,
cringeworthy.
That three-dimensional map. That they
right,
kept, that
right.
That was
great
really
effects,
cool.
and it wasn't just like slapped together. Like, oh, put something cool there. Like it. That's the great thing about Ridley Scott. It had a purpose. Mm-hmm. You could see every single thing down to the very from the buttons to the displays. Everything had a purpose. It just worked in an alien way, and that's the attention to detail that makes great science fiction.
Which is why it's so frustrating.
Production design, anyway.
The production design had such an attention to detail, and then the characters and the plot and everything was the script was just
and even the characters, like the performances weren't horrible. I mean they were really, they're good. I mean, Charlize Theron, I thought, did a great job. I think all the characters, they acted well. It's just their arcs and where the story went is where it kind of fell apart.
And just on
Ridley
that,
Scott's
to
not going
to
stand for a bad performance from
to go,
an actor.
To go back to the technology thing, yes, they had very cool technology, but I don't think it's enough, and this is a writing mistake, when something happens with that technology and... they go, oh, there must just be a problem with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that's probably nothing. There must be a problem.
Yeah, that's a glitch.
Like,
yeah.
Now, it's interesting when you say that, because I thought that was a setup for, like, some kind of ulterior motive, like, you know, the Paul Reiser character in Aliens. Like, was, like, that kind of, like, there's a lot of stuff that was, like,
but
the little seeds
of
stuff,
like,
and nothing paid off.
It either several of those didn't pay off.
They were, like, all these weird seeds of, like, oh, okay, so it's, like, these little conspiratorial things that would have added another layer to the movie. That it's like one person wrote the first half and another person wrote the second half of the movie.
Like Lindelof came in and just lofted it up, and then it was like,
oh yeah, he's like, well, let me write up all the premises, and then I've got another job, so you guys are gonna have to
and annoy
figure
the
out
audience.
The rest.
I mean, that's the other thing too. Real quick, I mean, I wanted this movie to be great, and I've said
expectations were high for this movie.
I had such high hopes, and especially because I was seeing it in 3D at the Arclight, which at this point is like $49.99. Right. And it just wasn't.
I refuse to see it in 3D. I'm glad I saw it in 2D.
By the way, 3D does nothing for me at this point.
I'm done with it. I'm done.
A very rare film that it makes it, it really enhances the experience. Like a movie like Hugo or How to Train Your Dragon, you could see the 3D really helps.
Was Hugo animated?
No, but a lot of the backgrounds and the way the camera moved were specifically designed for like going into the 3D. Mm-hmm. So, and it was Scorsese. He actually put some thought into it.
All right, well, let's move on to the other film, Sean, that you saw. You saw Lola versus...
Just Lola versus.
It ends there. It's just Lola versus.
Yeah. Lola versus. I was inspired by it because I was like, if somebody can get this movie made, I could get a movie made.
Wow, you got it on both ends, studio and indie over the weekend.
Yeah, it was Fox Searchlight, which surprised me. I mean, I think there were some good things about it, but I think really it was a movie that was trying to do way too much.
What was it about?
It was about a woman whose name is Lola. Mm-hmm.
Did she run?
She did not run.
Yeah, this is the prequel to Lola Runs. This is when Lola had twisted her ankle and was just using a soft cast.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I'll come back to that later. This is what I say. I think it was trying to do too much. It was like sort of a romantic comedy, but also sort of like tried to say something serious. She's about to marry a guy and she gets dumped right before the wedding, and so she has to figure out and pick up the pieces of her life. And there's a whole thing at the beginning, the very beginning of the movie. And, you know, I felt like they could never find the right tone because some of it was like wacky sitcom humor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they had jokes. Comedy is very hard to do right. I get very irritated when I see people doing it wrong, but there was a thing where it was like you could tell somebody said, well, we got to end this scene with a joke.
A button.
And then there was just a joke that had nothing to do with anything. You know, there was a sidekick character who, as it happens, is one of the screenwriters. She's actually one of the people who wrote. Her name is...
Is I Want to Be in the Movie?
Zoe Lister-Jones. And she is actually on Whitney, I think. I've never seen Whitney, but I looked at her credits, and she's an actress on Whitney. Mm-hmm. So this is the second movie she wrote with the director.
She already took that credit off. That's weird.
She
was the wisecracking, and I felt like she was almost like she needed to be talking out of the side of her mouth the whole time. Like, mm-hmm. just as one scene ends, and she's supposed to leave so that the girl can talk to whoever she's supposed to talk to, and she goes like, well, I'm gonna go wash my vagina, just out of nowhere. And the girl's like, what? And she goes, what, you don't ever just wash your vagina? And like toddles off to go
like sitcom-y,
yeah,
wacky, like neighbor stuff,
just weird, like made no, it didn't fit.
Wow.
And there was a lot of stuff like that. And it was all about she was 29, which is the whole she had just turned 29 or she was about to turn 30. And it was the whole like Saturn returns. It brings back all the stuff from previously in your life, which was the first kind of wacky joke in the film, was a big visual joke about all the stuff from her life being returned to her, which just didn't land. And, and the girl who played the woman who played Lola is Greta Gerwig. I can't read my own handwriting. But she was in Arthur. Did you guys see Arthur?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought in Arthur her performance was like watching a tree grow. Like it was so there was just nothing there to me. And she was actually better in this. So I feel like that's a step forward for her.
Maybe she washed her vagina. Maybe that's
And she's not, I mean, she's attractive. She's like a frumpier, prettier Chloe Sevigny. I say the G in America. And Joel Kinnaman was in it, who I really like from The Killing, which I don't like. And he was fine. You know, very smoldering, the Swedish Brad Pitt.
He's the Swedish.
But there were also little things, Like at one point there was a shot that just felt completely extraneous, and I always feel weird when I see stuff like that. It was Deborah Winger and Bill Pullman played her parents. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to see them doing stuff. But there was a shot where Deborah Winger comes in to talk to her daughter. Her daughter's sitting at the bar of a restaurant she works at. And she goes, come here, I got to talk to you. And they walk like 3 feet that way. And then you see them from the other side. And then they start their conversation. And it's like, why couldn't they just have had the conversation? Why did we have to see that shot? It was like a bizarre... prologue to the scene that had nothing to do with anything that should have just been cut. And that always makes me feel like there's people in charge of this that don't totally know what they're doing.
Well, that's just like the director looks like he's done a lot of TV. So maybe he was just trying to be like...
Young guy, yeah, too. Young he's guy, like 29 or yeah. 30.
So now he's like, I got to be a filmmaker.
Right. This is his second film. And here's another, and this is the last thing I'll say, is like... we're talking about Ridley Scott, and film is a visual medium. So it's definitely worth seeing Prometheus just for the way it looks.
Yeah.
And when people can tell a story visually, that's great. But sometimes you see somebody trying really hard to tell a story visually, and it's like, it's a little bit labored, a little bit like on the nose. So at the very end of this movie, and I'm not really giving anything away here because the whole movie is just about getting yourself together and uh-huh. figuring out how to live your life. Going back to the sprains or ankle thing, she's walking down the sidewalk in New York. And by the way, the movie was beautifully shot. I really liked the way it looked, mm-hmm. and it made me miss living in New York City. She's walking down the street, and she trips and falls. And
does she bump into Kevin James?
You would think. But no, no one helps her up. She gets up by herself.
She learns.
You think Kevin James is going to come along and help her up, and then we're going to have a sequel, which is called Lola versus Kevin James.
Cage match.
Lola versus the King of Queens. But no, she gets up by herself.
So we
very,
all learned
very significant. Yes. So I did not care for the movie. I mean, it's not my type of movie, too, to be fair,
right.
But it just wasn't that well done.
All right, so rent this one when you want to see craziness, and then go see Prometheus for visual effects. That's what we're telling you today. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get into, first of all, you were involved a little bit in this new documentary about Eddie Pepitone called The Bitter Buddha.
Yes.
How did you come up with, you kind of named him Bitter Buddha, right?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a thing that we do at the beginning of every episode on our show where I sort of host it and I introduce the other co-hosts. And I always come up with little nicknames for Amber, little nicknames for Jamie, little nicknames for Eddie. It started that way. But then one day I said the Bitter Buddha and we just all thought that was so... apropos. I mean, it's so perfect. It sums him up so perfectly because I'm a genius. And and so we just stuck with that. And that's become his whole brand.
Yeah.
You know? And what's hilarious about Eddie, and you saw a little bit of this on Sunday, is that he was going like, did I come up with that? I think. And I was like, Jesus Christ, Eddie. Like, please. You know? Yeah. So Steven, the guy who... directed that documentary, came and shot at our house, at my place a few times, and interviewed me about Eddie. I've known Eddie for almost 20 years at this mm-hmm. point. We were in an improv group in New York together and toured the country for 4 years.
Oh,
we used to be roommates on the road for a long time. So we have a history.
That's when you learn a lot about somebody.
Yes. Yeah.
Bunk beds?
Almost. I remember once we were in...
Two hammocks?
We were in a town...
On the circus train?
Did you guys get red-lighted?
We were in like Bellevue, Washington or someplace like that. It was like a paper mill town, so it smelled horrible. And we had like a five-day layover. And the rest of the people in the group all just went... Every day we'd go hiking and get high and whatever... And Eddie and I hated everybody else so much that we stayed in our room the whole time. The only thing we did was we went to a local store and bought two walkie-talkies, a Batman walkie-talkie and a Riddler walkie-talkie. And we went back to the room and we like ducked down on either side of the beds and would talk to each other through these walkie-talkies.
That's how Chris and I communicate here in the garage. That's how we get business done.
Graham, need another t-shirt. Over.
We're out of envelopes.
So we've known each other for a long time. So I knew, you know, I know a lot. And in a different way, I think, than most of the people that know him out here, you know?
And then, so that film is, it's done and they're kind of going to festivals and stuff.
Well, this week they're premiering it at the Chicago Just for Laughs Festival.
Oh, right, right.
Well, check
that. Patton's introducing
it. Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. It should be pretty neat.
Now, the other thing you like to do is see the Sound of Music at the Hollywood Bowl during the sing-along.
Correct.
Tell us about that.
This sounds amazing.
This is a tradition I have with my friend Molly that I've done every year since I've been here. So that's like six or seven times that I've done it now. And like I was a big musical theater guy growing up. I was in all the musicals in high school and college. So I've always loved that stuff. And I don't know how I found out. Oh, and Sound of Music has a history in my family because My grandfather, unfortunately, became, you know, had Alzheimer's as he got older. And
I thought you were saying my grandfather, unfortunately, was one of the Nazis. Yeah. Tried to.
All of the Nazis in that movie were based on him. No, but as he was, you know, for the last few years of his life, he was not.
He would just say, papers, please.
Deutschland über alles. He grew a tiny mustache. He had a mistress named Ava. And eventually he shot himself in the head in the basement.
And he created meth.
No, but he would watch The Sound of Music over and over and over again every day. And it got to the point where it was banned in my parents' house after he died. But I was never there for that, except I would go home every once in a while and he would be watching Sound of Music. So I always sort of had a fond attachment to it. And then I saw, you know, Sound of Music sing along out here. And I was like, oh, let's go check this out and see what it's like. And it was pretty fantastic. You know, people all dress up.
Sells out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And people dress up in there's a costume competition beforehand.
Wow. People LARP Sound of Music.
Yes. Yeah.
Or cosplay.
But it's the costumes are sometimes amazing. I think the best one I've ever seen. And if you win the costume contest, you get like a 7-day cruise in Mexico. Whoa. Like there's real shit going on.
That's no joke.
And the winners are usually Asian families with a bunch of kids, you know, like they'll all come out dressed as like, I'm Doe, I'm Ray, I'm me, I'm, you know, and they each have like a, but the best one I ever saw was a kid came out, I think he was with his mother, and the kid didn't have a costume on. The mother was covered in green felt and had a remote controlled helicopter attached to her head that the kid was making fly around. So it was the opening shot of The Sound of Music, which is an amazing helicopter shot of the Austrian Alps.
Wow.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah, so people get really into their clever costumes.
This is one of the things that I truly love about LNA. And I remember when I first moved out here from Chicago, I was like, oh, this is a movie town. Like, you really...
People embrace it.
They love the movies. I never, like, no one had giant Oscar parties in Chicago. They might people get together, maybe, but... And I remember watching, like, that kind of stuff, the Hollywood Cemetery, where they show old movies on the mausoleum.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
That is amazing. And like this, where people get dressed up. And I remember just like watching all these. I remember going to the New Beverly Cinema and watching like Serpico. And I saw so many films that I
double features
only seen on video, on the big screen here. And just the way this town is so in love with movies and embraces it and shit like that.
Right. Well, and the whole movie, it's like Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, there's specific things. They give you a bag when you go in that has a variety of specific things in it that you're supposed to do at certain times. Like,
Rocky Horror?
When the captain and Maria kiss for the first time, everybody
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. It's only a 60-year-old movie.
Spoiler alert.
Also, Bruce Willis was... Well, all right. But there's like a popper that you're supposed to pull, and like every time the Baroness comes on screen, the entire crowd starts hissing. Like literally every time she comes on.
That's great.
And when they sing Edelweiss, everybody takes out their cell phones and waves them back and forth. And it's actually very cool. You look up and there's 18,000 people rocking their cell phones back and forth in time to this music.
That's awesome.
It's a pretty cool, like, I mean, I don't know. As a comic, I feel like my experience with audiences is always, I'm not a part of this. I'm creating this. I'm just giving other people an experience to share. And so I love being in a position where I get to be part of the experience, you know?
That's really cool. And then talk about the first movie you ever made.
Okay. Well, when I was in sixth grade, I was in a weird, like, it's so weird to think about it now. It was like a gifted and talented program. And one day a week, for the whole day, we had electives, which means you could take an art class, a dance class, and a film class. You had to pick a major because two of the classes you took in the morning and one you took in the afternoon.
Where are you from?
From New Rochelle, New York, which is outside New York City. And it's crazy to me that they took a whole day to do that. It was a poorly run program because I feel like I just fucked around the entire year. But I chose dance as my major because I was in sixth grade and I knew that most of the rest of the people in the class would be girls. And I was right. So I would cut my classes in the morning. I wouldn't go to art class or but then I would go to film. And we made a movie called The Great Newspaper Fraud, which was basically Animal House, but set in an elementary school. Like we had, you know, the newspaper had made a prank headline and been shut down by the principal of the school. So now we were doing all sorts of things to get back at the school. And I remember I said shit in the movie at one point. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I got to say shit on screen. You know, it was really fun. I loved it. I loved doing it.
I would love to have a film festival of everybody's first movie they made when they were kids. We did one. My family, when I was living in Madison, Wisconsin, we'd go up to Door County, Wisconsin, which is, they call it the Martha's Vineyard of the Midwest. And we'd go up this with this other family, the Myers.
By the way, I love how the Midwest has the something of the Midwest. Like everything. There's one of everything in the Midwest.
Yeah, Michigan
the
is
Paris
the Harvard.
The Paris of the Midwest. Yeah, yeah.
So we would go and we stay at this place called Cherry Lodge. And we had, this is old Super 8 film footage. And my brother, who's 3 years older than me, we're going to make a movie. So we made a horror movie called Terror at Cherry Lodge. And it was all, you know, he edited it in camera. And, you know, I think this plot was people were going around killing. And I was the, like, I think it was kind of a Friday the 13th ripoff where I was the like tormented one. And I remember we did this scene where, this girl, she was like my crazy mom and we dressed her up in a crazy outfit. And then she slapped me in the face. And we were like, you know, my brother's like, you got to slap him. I think you just wanted to have a scene where someone knocked me in the mouth. And I was like, yeah, just go. I don't know, 12 at the time. I'm like, yeah, just hit me. And I remember she hits me and she starts laughing because I made some crazy face. But I would love to do that. And Chris, you have a film that's on.
Yes, it's actually on my DVD. I was in middle school. The reason I was asking is because we had the same program.
Oh, really?
Where you would, it was in about middle school. It was about 7th grade.
Were you also from Rochelle?
No, it was from Pennsylvania. So I was thinking maybe, you know.
Holy shit, Chris, that's you. Yeah.
And then when you said it wasn't a very good supervised program, I realized, oh no, ours was very strict and regulated. And it was like, you know, you had computers. Everything was like advanced studies kind of thing for middle school. But then you did, like, you had your electives. And I picked a filmmaking and I went with Dave Schmidt. I mean, we were 12 and 13. And
the guy that did the audio for Afghanistan.
The guy that did the audio for Afghanistan. Yeah, we did. When we were 12 and 13 in middle school, we made this claymation movie about the blob coming out of a volcano and eating a town and eating the army. And the army had to come and try to kill it. And it was all claymation. So we were literally there for, like, you know, a couple of shots, a couple of frames here and there. Mm-hmm. And I remember we just bring all of our toys to school. I mean, that was like, oh, this is cool. We get to bring all of our trucks and army men, and this is great. And I remember my dad saying, what are you bringing all that stuff to school for? What are you doing? He's like, we're making a movie, Dad. And then what I did was I found it years later when I was putting my Myopic Visions DVD together, and Dave Schmidt became a sound designer. So what I did is I sent it to him, and he put a whole soundtrack onto it, you know, 20 years later, actually probably 25. And then I called a composer, a friend of mine, who does the music to like Penn and Teller and all those shows, and he did a soundtrack to it. So it's been completely remixed with sound and music. In fact, we even created like credits at the beginning. It was like another Blob movie by Dave Schmidt and Chris Mancini, age 13. And then underneath it was a sound design by David Schmidt, age 38. And then, and then music by Gary Stockdale, age 50. So it's on the Myopic Visions DVD. It was really fun because it was like, it's just to see kind of, that was my first movie. And then we kind of, we just added sound to it. But it was super
great. That was the biggest thing I remember, by the way, from that whole filmmaking class. I spent a year doing that. Mm-hmm. And we had another movie we made, which was about the president being assassinated. And the funniest thing I remember about that was that we had all these security guys, you know, shots of all the Secret Service agents around and whatever. The president was sitting on a chair on stage in our actual auditorium. The president was played by this guy, Scott Wilkins. And then you see the assassin's gun and he shoots him and the president dies. He just tilts his head down. And that means he's dead. But the thing I remember most from all of that is one day Fred Schminke, who was our film teacher, shot a bunch of footage of everybody in the playground. He said, okay, everybody pretend you're dying. Everybody lie down and pretend you're dying. And he showed it back to us just straight. And it was like, okay, that's kind of weird and whatever. Then he had put music under it and he showed it to us with music. And it blew my mind how much more interesting it was with music under it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah,
the audio, people don't realize. And Dave Schmidt says that all the time. Is like, you know, people don't know that audio kind of fixes cuts and, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Well, when you're watching a movie and the sound.
Well, we'll give him a plug, right? Acapellaaudio.com.
Yeah, check it out.
If he did the sound to Afghanistan. And if you ever have,
with no instruments.
He does it all. He has indie rates. So if you've got like a little film for short or feature, he'll.
I gotta tell you, I took a consumer grade camcorder into a war zone, so my sound quality sucked. And Dave like really
cleaned it up.
He
yeah,
so cleaned it up. I mean, like there's, you know, it's helicopters and there's no, you know, there's just a built-in microphone. It's really, it was quite a challenge what he did, and he did a great job. All right, so let's
get
move
to do DVDs.
DVDs, Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance.
Oh God! You know, like I said before, about it takes a lot to disappoint Neil when he's excited about a dumb movie. This did it. It was like, because it was the Crank 2 directors, he thought it would be a little more interesting. Was not.
I think Nick Cage's hairpiece.
They couldn't direct the hairpiece.
They couldn't direct his hairpiece.
I was on an improv team named that once.
Direct the hairpiece?
No, Nick Cage's hairpiece.
Nick Cage's hairpiece?
Oh, but that would be a great team name.
That would be a great improv team name. Nick Cage's hairpiece. Whatever. I mean, if anyone watches this and rents it, let us know. let us know what you thought.
If Neil is right or wrong. And then Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows.
I didn't mind this. I mean, I think this is a perfect
rental.
I like
the first one. I haven't seen the second one.
Second one's, it's fine.
I bet it's loud.
Yeah, it is loud.
Probably.
If you didn't see this in the theaters, this is a perfect rental, I think.
And Tyler Perry's Good Deeds. And if you've already seen this movie, if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So
that's an oxymoron, right? Tyler Perry's Good Deeds.
Coming out this week, Rock of Ages.
Oh, my God. We have to get Lord Corrett to review this movie. You know what? The thing about Rock of Ages is I would have been on board with a number of different things not being there. One of them, Tom Cruise. And the other one is the director, Adam Shankman. He's a TV. He doesn't really have a lot of features under his belt. And he's done episodes of Glee. And so you're looking at no.
I don't know anything about this movie except what I've seen in the trailer and on the billboards. But it looks like Tom Cruise is supposed to be a hot, sexy, Bon Jovi-ish type of rock star.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's set in the 80s.
He's like 50 now. So how is that possible?
Well, this is where it already falls apart in the trailer. That's a great point. The other thing, too, is wouldn't it be great if you actually cast a singer in this role that has to sing all these freaking songs and make them sound believable like you are an actual rock star?
And I'm sure he does his own singing in the movie.
He does. Of course he does. And they played some clips. And, you know, it's such... this is where, if you want to see Hollywood bullshit, you can really just watch any of these promotional trailers, any of these little interviews, because every time they show a clip of Tom Cruise singing, it goes back to one of the actors or the director going, he's got such a powerful voice. And you're like, no, he doesn't.
Stop lying.
No, he doesn't.
And their eyes are spinning when they're saying that. Like, you are getting sleepy. Yes. He has a powerful voice. Believe, America, believe.
Yeah, it was like, come on. Just, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to give us that much bullshit, just keep your mouth shut. You know, at that point, just, okay, it's Tom Cruise pretending to be a rock star. And it's, oh my God. But this movie didn't have to be that hard. You know, if you put a singer or an actual actor who could sing, who's not a giant, because now all you see, oh, Tom Cruise. The whole point is it's supposed to be like a rock star is on top of his game. Anyway.
I know this didn't happen, but I would have loved it if he got to sing old-time rock and roll in that movie. Because then you could do a mashup of Tom Cruise singing old-time rock and roll to Tom Cruise dancing around in his underwear from Risky Business.
YouTube, get on that.
I'm so on board with that.
And this is the next movie is That's My Boy. Ooh, not a lot of good choices this weekend. This is Adam Sandler, Andy Samberg movie where Adam is Andy's dad because he screwed his teacher when he was younger.
Oh, I'm going to say this real quick. Rent, instead of seeing Rock of Ages, rent Mark Wahlberg and Rockstar. Like, that movie...
Which was based on a true story, actually.
Yeah, that was actually... Go see that. That movie
Mark Wahlberg, wait, can he sing?
Yeah.
He's got a powerful voice.
Is that...
He's got a really powerful voice.
Oh, he was in a boy band.
Oh, right.
So he's a singer who can act.
Yes.
Put him in there.
That's weird.
Tom Cruise, not in a boy band. He's in a cult.
Yeah.
There's a difference. They're similar. There's some overlap.
You know, it's singing, not chanting.
I do want to see Alec Baldwin E-meter. In a wig. All right, yeah, that's my boy. Okay, fine. We got it.
That actually sounds like a funny premise to me. Like, what would happen if...
Sure.
But it just looks...
Like Jack and Jill.
Yeah. Not good. Yeah.
I know. It's this is the thing.
Like, so rent something cool is what we're saying this weekend.
Rent something cool. Rent Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg. Rent that movie. That movie's excellent. All right. Well, I believe that is our program.
Yes. We want to thank you guys. And remember, this Monday is our big Nerd Melt 114th-ish episode extravaganza and book signing with all the writers. It's going to be really fun. We're going to have a great podcast. We're going to have... we might even have cake. I think we're going to have some cake for you guys. Because we really want to celebrate you guys. You guys have made this all possible. We really appreciate it.
Honestly, you guys, all you fans, you guys, and the thing that's been so cool in doing this, and it was kind of what we touched on in the beginning part of the episode of when you go on a podcast and you have no idea what it's going to be. And Chris and I were just like, I don't know. We'll just kind of talk movies and it's turned into this thing. And
we figured it out with an actual structure and business plan.
Yeah, we got a structure. It took us a while. We figured it only took us
business
a
plan. That's the thing we're missing.
Yeah. Well, you guys got the sound quality. It took us forever with that one.
Yeah. Yeah. That was our first big hurdle.
And it's so cool. Like to have fans and now being on the road and all the comments you guys write and come, you guys are really smart. Like, that's the thing I've noticed. Yeah. Some podcasts are like, ooh, our fans. Ugh. Like, you guys
We're proud of our fans. We're
very proud of you guys. You guys are very smart. You're very on it. And it's such a cool thing. And if you are in LA on the 18th, come out because it's kind of a big celebration party for all of us.
And I'm not proud of you, but only because I don't know you.
You need to win Sean's approval.
Yes.
He is the dad who's
hard to get.
Never going to give you that approval, and you're going to fight your whole life.
Yeah.
And maybe develop an addiction. But we were glad you listened to the program.
Until
he'll criticize you for that, too.
Yes. Until you're wearing a helicopter hat, all bets are off.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much to our guest, Sean Conroy. Where can people find you online?
Follow me on Twitter, @SeanConroy. Check out my podcast, Sean Conroy presents
S-E-A-N?
Yes. Sean Conroy presents The Flabbergast, which is available at feralaudio.com and also at iTunes. And then check out my podcast with Eddie, which is called The Long Shot and is available at thelongshotpodcast.com and also on iTunes.
And the episode I just recorded with you guys will be out
probably 2 or 3 weeks from now.
Cool. So check back. I'll tweet that, guys, when the...
Oh, and we just did, we should mention this, we did On the Page with... Pilar.
Oh, with Pilar's, yeah.
Yeah, so that you can listen to us talk about screenwriting
specifically,
on there.
Yeah, what makes a good script, and I think we would have discussed more about Prometheus had we had that movie come out when we recorded that. Yeah, On the Page is a good show, so check that out. All right, yes, Palm Strike Dance Party, that is available as a ringtone on iTunes. So go check.
Finally,
your phone has been ringing really dumb. Now it can get exciting and dumb, but an exciting dumbness. Yeah, so
dumb sighting. Dumb.
Hashtag dumb sighting. Please put that on Twitter.
Palm Party Strike Dance.
So check that out. And of course, the book, we're still shipping it out. And thank you for all that.
I am proud of you.
Yes. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, and there's no reviews on Amazon yet. So let's see which super fan will be the first one to review it on Amazon.
All right, you guys. Thanks again to Sean Conroy. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Helicopter hat.